So we ended with Yudhisthira was still putting further questions to Uncle Vidura. How is he the uncle? What's the relation? Uncle Vidura? Who is he the uncle of? Yeah. Right. So, my uncle, you must have visited Dwarka. In that holy place are our friends and well-wishers, the descendants of Yadu, who are always wrapped in the service of Lord Sri Krishna. You might have seen them or heard about them. Are they all happy in their abodes? Krishna Devata, those who are always wrapped in the service of Lord Krishna. In Brihat Bhagavatamrita, there's two parts to Brihat Bhagavatamrita, part one and part two. In part one, Narada Muni is in search of the one who is, or those who are, the greatest recipients of the mercy of the Lord. This is being presented by Maharaj Parikshit speaking to his mother Uttara, because Uttara comes to Maharaj Parikshit, according to Brihat Bhagavatamrita, after Shukadeva Goswami finishes speaking and before the snake bird comes to kill him. And in her motherly affection, she's terribly distressed. She knows her son is about to die of this vicious kind of death. And her son warns her or advises her, "Mother, please don't worry. Everything is going to be all right. My consciousness is fixed upon the personality of Godhead after hearing from Shukadeva Goswami, so I know where my destination is, and you should be happy for me. I'm going to a good place. Please don't worry. I'm fearless." So then Uttara asks, "Well, if that message that you heard from Shukadeva Goswami was so powerful and potent, could you summarize the essence of that message?" So Brihat Bhagavatamrita says the summary of the essence of what Shukadeva Goswami spoke to Maharaj Parikshit, what he understood, his realization of what he understood, in the form of a question-answer. And just another layer of, you know how the Puranas are, that narration was being told by Jaimini to Janamejaya. Yes. Jaimini had just finished narrating Mahabharata, only a unique version of Mahabharata. It was authorized, but it especially went to the attraction, the all-attractiveness of Krishna and the various rasas of love and exchange between Krishna and others, as opposed to Vyasa's Mahabharata, which focuses upon good and evil and virtue and what is proper conduct, what is dharma, and what is adharma, and dharma will always prevail, so stay on the side of dharma and be a devotee. So Janamejaya, who just wanted to hear about Mahabharata because he wanted to hear about his father and his great illustrious grandparents, the Pandavas, and of course Krishna too. So he asked Janamejaya, can you narrate Mahabharata? So he had a Mahabharata katha. And when he finished hearing that Mahabharata, he said, oh, this is so nice. Is there a sequel to this? And some literatures have. They're supplements or sequels. Akila, it's called. Just as Garga Samhita is the Akila or sequel to Srimad Bhagavatam. So, is there such a literature? And Janamejaya said, yes, there is such a literature. You are such an enthusiastic listener, I'll be happy to describe it to you. And it begins like this. After Maharaj Parikshit had heard from Shukadeva Goswami, he was approached by his mother, Uttara, who spoke as she spoke, and he replied to his mother, yes, I can do that. Normally one wouldn't ask at the 11th hour of life like this for a Srimad Bhagavatam summary, but because you're such a qualified mother and the question is all perfect for the benefit of all others who will hear this subject matter, I will give you a summary, the essence of what I heard from Shukadeva Goswami. But it's definitely going to have to be an essence because the other one took 7 days, so it's going to be an essence. So the essence I will describe in the form of a narration. Once upon a time, Narada Muni. So it's the narration of Narada Muni starting on a quest for seeking who is the greatest recipient of the mercy of the Lord. So the quest that he goes through is designed to take us through the platform of pure devotion. Pure devotion with great opulence. Pure devotion with a great level of opulence and the display of the mercy of the Lord here in this world. Then the greater, even greater opulence of devotion to the Supreme Lord and the heavenly planets, Indraloka, Brahmaloka, Shivaloka, then Vaikunthaloka, and then the relationship of love that exists between the Pandavas, between Hanuman and Ram, the love between the Pandavas. These are going in ascending order. Of intimate, now it's an intimacy, degrees of intimacy. Prahlad, because he always remembered Krishna, that was his way of achieving perfection. Vishnu Smaranam. And Hanuman from Dasyam, the Pandavas from Sakyam, and the residents of Dwaraka, they were considered by the Pandavas to be even more intimate than themselves. More intimate because they always had Krishna's association. The Pandavas either had to invite Krishna to come for some special sacrifice, or they had to get themselves in a pack of trouble so Krishna would come and... And then after the pack of trouble was settled by Krishna, then he would go away. And where would he go? Dwaraka. How fortunate are the residents of Dwaraka? That's the mood of the Pandavas. And amongst the residents of Dwaraka, the most fortunate amongst the residents of Dwaraka is Uddhava. Uddhava is the most intimate. And he lists the descriptions of Uddhava's intimacies. So, you know, what I just summarized is this much. Well, there's some more that I didn't summarize. There's what things that happen when he goes to Dwaraka. But as far as the Pandavas, so this is one of the messages of Brihad Bhagavatamrita, which is a summary of the message of the Bhagavatam, and here's the message of the Bhagavatam. The Pandavas consider the Yadus to be more exalted than themselves, specifically in terms of the intimacy of their relationship with Krishna. My back is hurting. The intimacy of their relationship with Krishna. And so, and Krishna appeared in the Yadu dynasty, and for so long he stayed in Mathura because he was with the Yadus. He left Vrindavan to relieve the members of the Yadu dynasty of the dangers of wicked Kamsa. And when Kamsa was killed by Krishna, Kamsa was replaced by the legitimate king, Kamsa's father, Ugrasena. And when the Yadus were in danger because of the attack by Jarasandha, and simultaneous attack of Jarasandha and who was the other? Kaliyavana. Then he transferred the Yadu dynasty members to Dwaraka. He had Dwaraka built. Thank you. Is there a way to plug it in? Oh, that's great. Okay, so they're naturally concerned about the members of the Yadu dynasty. And so Krishna Devata, always wrapped in thought of Lord Krishna, and his different transcendental activities, there are the categories of pure devotees, Prabhupada's indicating. And Vidura, this is a nice distinction to consider. Vidura, before he left the royal palace, he was considered wise. When he returned, he was considered a pure devotee. It's not that before he left, he was indifferent to Krishna, but rather his spiritual qualification became ever more intensified. And it became ever more intensified, assisted by detachment, through detaching himself literally from family affairs and undergoing the austerities of a mendicant's life as opposed to the royal comfort life. This is another theme in the Bhagavatam, that nivritti, gradually, or progressively at least, decreasing involvement in material affairs for the sake of increasing one's involvement in spiritual activity. Not necessarily in the form of accepting of a renounced order of life or a renounced ashram, but in any circumstance of life, decreasing material affinity for material things, then affinity, then will naturally follow even the practical contact with material things. Deliberately, consciously, and not just for the sake of elevation due to renunciation or calling renunciation elevation, but for the sake of greater spiritual involvement, greater involvement in hearing and chanting. And so the other contributing factor besides detachment, which does enhance hearing and chanting, effective hearing and chanting, was he met Maitreya. Again, the importance of a sadhu. And through hearing from Maitreya, Vidura became a pure devotee. So when he came back, he has all the prior qualifications, his great affection and care for the royal family members, his being the wise Uncle Vidura, being the protector, now the greatest of all qualifications, he's a pure devotee. And surely he has gone to that place of the pure devotees, Dwaraka, where the Yadus stayed. Then Prabhupada is explaining, on the platform of pure devotion, there's no distinctions like we have here. Oh, he's a grihastha and he's a renunciate. Those distinctions we make conventionally, and they should be made, and even Krishna made distinctions. He received Narada and Sandipani Muni and worshipped them. He received Yudhisthira. Even Yudhisthira knew who Krishna was, the super soul walking amongst them. Still, when Krishna would come before Yudhisthira, he would approach him, bow down and touch his feet, and Yudhisthira would embrace him. Because that was how strong was their mood of affection. That knowing what Krishna wanted, he behaved so that Krishna would be pleased. And Krishna was pleased by showing all etiquettes and protocols. Krishna derived happiness showing respect to Yudhisthira and Kunti. So Yudhisthira's expert, he knew how to process that one. Krishna's coming to touch my feet. And he's my worshipable Lord. But so there are distinctions in protocol, but the point that Prabhupada is making here, perfection is according to devotion, not according to external situation. Or he's saying it here. There's no difference in their pure devotional qualities, either remaining at home or leaving home. What's the real qualification? Wrapped in tension on Krishna. There's a nice section get exactly where it comes. Arjun and Krishna are riding on the same chariot. This is after the Kurukshetra battle. They're going to attend some function. Forget exactly what it is. And Arjuna says to Krishna, you've come on this world and instructed me and to perform so many wonderful activities. Can you give further instruction? And Krishna indicated, I already gave thorough instruction. It was all fully transcendental. And Arjuna says, well, I can't remember it all. It's so important. And can you speak again? No, he wants to be stirring. He wants Krishna to speak. And Krishna says, it's not very good that you haven't been able to remember everything. But what I will do is I'll summarize. And he makes a very short statement. One who understands that they're not this body and performs their service mindful of their true spiritual identity and performs all of their activities immersed in thought of me. This is the essence of my message of Bhagavad Gita. So here, the qualification, the core qualification of being a pure devotee is not ashram specific. It's not occupation specific. It's not varna and ashram specific. It's how fixed one's consciousness is upon the Supreme Lord. And how is that going to be possible? By mechanical process? No. By attachment and affection? Yes. You have an attachment for something or someone, and it's always on your mind. These people on these long flights that, you know, they can't smoke cigarettes. They had this mechanical problem. That's why we were 4.5 hours delayed in Frankfurt. So they had us get off the plane. And they took the plane to the hangar so they can put another, whatever it is, electronic component in replace of the one that wasn't functioning properly. So they made arrangements for us to have something. Fortunately, I had so many somethings made from New York. But a third of the plane just went rushed to that area where you could smoke and were puffing away. Imagine what it's like for them, you know, the 11, 12 hours of flight, no smoking. When you're attached to something by addiction or any other way of attachment, that something is on your mind. You can't stop it. Young boy, young girl have a romance and he can't get her off of his mind and she can't get him off of her mind, and wherever they are, they're thinking of each other. Attachment, that object of attachment is... So this asakti stage is being interfered with by coverings of our consciousness, and our consciousness goes to those coverings, the other things that we're attached to. So that the first stage of our spiritual cleansing is to become free from those coverings of consciousness. The means of becoming, so that's anartha nivritti, the means of becoming effective in anartha nivritti is bhajana kriya. And to have effective bhajana kriya, we have to have some affinity for sadhu. Otherwise, who's going to stay with their bhajan? A show bottle person, but it doesn't really have efficacy like one who is doing because there's genuine attachment to sadhu. And if one has the opportunity for sadhu sangha, if there isn't some preliminary faith, it's not going to bear any fruit. So now going back up on the other end, up on the end of pure devotion, what's the goal? What's the goal of our association? Is to become attached to Krishna. Our association, our activities, work, family, occupation, mangalarti, taking bath, taking prasadam together, whatever the so many activities, it's all focused on one thing, becoming attached to Krishna, getting a taste for the holy name. Taking the cotton off of the tongue so one can taste. Removing the coverings and material conceptions and material attractions and addictions and affinities, and becoming absorbed in Krishna's holy name, the medium of service to Krishna. This is the platform of pure devotion. So we're wanting to cultivate that. When we're doing the things that we're doing, we should bear in mind what's the purpose. Then Prabhupada makes the distinction, unfavorable remembrance of Krishna and favorable remembrance of Krishna. Shishupal, Kamsa, unfavorable remembrance. So, and ours is wanting to please Krishna through our activities. That our life should be pleasing to Krishna. Our life is an offering of so many services unto Krishna that will be pleasing to Him. That's what we want. So the Yadus were on that platform, Vidura was on that platform, Yudhisthira was on that platform, and now we're getting to hear, we're eavesdropping on a conversation between such pure devotees. Pandavas speaking to Vidura about the Yadus. Just like, you may know certain devotees who are situated somewhere and someone's coming from that place and, how are so-and-so Prabhu doing? Or you meet somebody when you go to some function you haven't seen for a long time and you naturally inquire, how are your devotional practices? How is your attachment for Krishna faring? So, what did Uncle Vidura do in response? He answered all of their questions except for this one. What's the one he didn't answer? Huh? Yeah, what's going on in Dwarka? He didn't tell him what's going on. Not only Krishna had left the planet, the whole Yadu dynasty was destroyed. He didn't say it. Why didn't he say it?
Sad messages are not given directly. The message is sad news.
He didn't want to be the bearer of bad news.
It's not given directly.
It's not given indirectly.
It's not given directly.
Not given directly. Could you explain that one? You're not wrong. I just want you to express yourself clearly.
The news of Krishna, being destroyed, was it bad news?
That was bad news for sure.
So it's not considered.
It's not a cultured person's program to give bad news. She just edit it out, right? It's okay. Right. Right. How does this news get conveyed? Vidura didn't convey it. Who did convey it? Someone else. Yes. Arjuna. Yeah, we have to have another chapter just dedicated to that one. Such an important piece of news. The fact is, they already, intuitively, they already knew. It just didn't have confirmation. These are expert, they're pure devotees, and they're also expert in diplomacy, and they understood before Krishna returned from Hastinapur back to Dwarka. His business is now complete. All the reasons for which he appeared is now complete. It's just described like that in Mahabharata. When after Yudhisthira was installed on the throne, Krishna stayed for several weeks. He just hung around. And Yudhisthira understood very soon Krishna is going to ask to leave Hastinapur because he's finished his business. And his other relatives, the Yadus, are waiting. And Devaki and Vasudev, they're waiting. Members of the royal family, they're dependent upon him. Krishna's going to leave. And not only he's going to leave because he knew before Krishna asked. I mean, it's just obvious. Krishna's going to go back. And similarly, Krishna's going to leave the planet soon. He knew. Imagine what it's like to be attached to someone you know they're going to leave the world. It's a intense drama. And so then how can you say yes, it's okay to go, and how can you say no, you can't go? It's a difficult... When attachments form, then one is leaving oneself vulnerable for the sufferings that come from attachments. And so if one understanding that, the tendency out of frustration is to become an impersonalist. Don't become attached to anything or anyone. And our spiritual message is become attached to Krishna. Because that's life, and this other is not life. It's an attempted suicide of one's spiritual identity. Impersonalism. And spiritual identity, you can't kill the soul. You can't kill the individuality of the soul. It's going to come out. You try to restrain it, put it in a straitjacket and put a gag around its mouth and blindfold it and throw it in solitary confinement. Still, there's individuality going to come out. So where there's attachment to Krishna, which is the essence of the message of Bhagavad Gita and the essence of the message of Srimad Bhagavatam, then there's a problem, a nice problem, and that is feelings of separation. Because I'm attached, and Krishna's going to be not here, or where, if he's here, he may go. But those are our Vaishnava acharyas describe. Those are even greater sentiments than the sentiment of meeting. The sentiment of love and separation is a more intense mood of love than love and meeting. It intensifies feelings of love for there to be separation. from the object of love. The people who are deprived of their cigarettes were thinking more about cigarettes than when they're smoking. Etc. Okay, so that's the end of that section of Vidura and Yudhisthira exchanging questions and answers. Doesn't give Vidura's answers at all. It does to some extent in the Mahabharata. But he answered their questions. And he fulfilled their desires, not just by, they weren't just interested in information, they were interested in his association. Thus, Mahatma Vidura, being treated just like a godly person by his kinsmen, remained there for a certain period just to rectify the mentality of his eldest brother and in this way bring happiness to all the others. Several things. Vidura was his, once again, when he was in the royal assembly, he was very wise. He added to that asset, detachment, great and intense level of detachment, and he added to that qualification, pure devotion. So one who's as detached as Vidura was, he didn't just, have an anger tantrum and storm out the door and come back a day later or a week later or a year later, 30 years later. So he wasn't just on an anger tantrum program. He was on a purification program. So he had, through detachment, now that he's so detached, why is he coming back? He's on a platform now of attachment to Krishna. On that platform of attachment to Krishna, one sees Pandita Samadarshana. Right? One sees all persons equally. Surely, Vidura was on that platform. So why did he return? And the answer is he returned because of great compassion, knowing full well also that because of the combination of factors, that is, his attainment through detachment and association with Maitreya, attachment, both had become very strong, but also Dhritarashtra was at the end of his rope. Vidura was in a position where he could do something for a person who's about to fall off the cliff. He was in the position where Dhritarashtra would listen to him, finally. So he couldn't just let him go off the cliff. I'm a pure devotee, I'm detached. He returned not out of attachment, not out of wanting comfortable living again, not out of attachment to relations to the body, but out of compassion. Unique amongst those on the planet was the relationship that Vidura had with Dhritarashtra. Unique was the position, due to that position and their long-standing relationship, that he would be able to instruct Dhritarashtra to rescue him, whereas others would not. Dhritarashtra wouldn't have accepted it. He was ready to accept it. At least that was Vidura's consideration. So in a compassionate mood and in a timely fashion, he had returned. This was his mission. Reviving the Pandavas in general and delivering Dhritarashtra. So this is the mood of sadhu. Mood of a sadhu is compassion. What can be done to bring value and upward progress into the lives of others? And one of the values that the sadhu can provide is the message of detachment for those who are overly attached. So that's what we're going to be hearing shortly. Now, what about Yudhisthira? Yudhisthira is also a pure devotee. Yudhisthira is, although his, we just heard Prabhupada describing and repeated this message, that they're on the same platform in one sense. They're taking different roles because that's what pure devotees do. They serve Krishna in different capacities. So, why wasn't Yudhisthira doing the same thing? Recognizing the plight of his uncle, Dhritarashtra, and just, you know, giving him the sako punch, giving him the sadhu message. Why didn't he do that? It wouldn't have come out of etiquette. It would not have had effect. Why? No. No. Vyasadeva was a grahastha. It's not ashram. Yeah. And out of deference due to age and wisdom, it just wasn't his position to speak those things. His position was, he was feeling, what was Yudhisthira feeling? He was feeling guilty. Although so many things had been said by so many persons, he was still feeling, so many persons lost their lives for me, so I could become a king. Horrible. The least I can do is that person who lost 100 sons, I can care for him like a son. So those feelings of pain of having lost all his sons, it would be mollified or relieved by my serving him like a son. And because that was his heart, his dedication, the Pandavas followed, with a little exception. Bhima. Bhima added some salt into the wound. But that was Yudhisthira's position. He wanted Dhritarashtra to feel as if his sons had won and now he was the king. They were doing the ruling, but he was calling the shots. And they served him in that way. Now, that can prove to be a problem when one's soothing the feelings of another gets in the way of their making progressive spiritual advancement. And that's one of the functions or roles of one who is detached. One who is detached can speak the things that Vidura spoke. He had that relationship. Dhritarashtra trusted him. Dhritarashtra valued his wisdom. It's not like if whatever Yudhisthira would say, he would just ignore it. But it wasn't the same. So it was appropriate, most appropriate for Vidura to speak, and so Krishna orchestrated that he spoke. On the part of Maharaj Yudhisthira, it was quite in order to maintain his uncle in a befitting manner. But acceptance of such magnanimity by Dhritarashtra was not desirable. So it was appropriate that someone else say, this magnanimous gesture being provided by your nephew, Yudhisthira, while it's honorable, you're accepting it isn't. And he accepted it because he didn't see an alternative because he was attached. That's what he wanted. Why he had done so many ignoble things or consented to Duryodhana's doing them, because he was attached, and attachment makes one blind. One cannot see. This isn't favorable. Although it's very kind of, most kind of Yudhisthira, its the fault is not on Yudhisthira's side, the fault is on Dhritarashtra's side. Therefore, Vidura came as the, in the drama of Dhritarashtra's life, to provide that leverage to get him out of that inappropriate compromise situation. How many times in lectures did Prabhupada speak about persons in political position staying in that political position until they die? And then they're dragged down by the jaws of death. Gandhi and Nehru and this one and that one. You know, it's not just here in India, all over the world. Winston Churchill and these people that just, they think nothing will go on. So, but the opposite is the position of one who is attached to the Supreme Lord. Bharat Maharaj, Yudhisthira Maharaj, exalted kings, they detach themselves, turn the kingdom over to others, trust that it will go on nicely, and move on. Talks of spiritual enlightenment are so refreshing that while instructing Dhritarashtra, Vidura attracted the attention of all the members of the family, and all of them took pleasure in hearing him patiently. This is the way of spiritual realization. The message should be heard attentively, and if spoken by a realized soul, will act on the dormant heart of the conditioned soul, and by continuous hearing, one can attain the perfect stage of self-realization. So he stayed and he instructed. And when he was instructing, there's different versions of this, like, you know, there's different versions of this final instruction that he gives. Here it seems very clear in the Bhagavatam that there was general instruction and there was private time between the two brothers or the two uncles. And the private time is when he's particularly bearing down on him. Look, let's get to the point. And in a general way, he's also describing for the audition of the royal family members, don't become comfortable in the lap of luxury, because your day is coming too. And a sadhu will prepare one even from childhood or at any stage of life. This is all temporary. Well, you're investing, and all of you, you're investing so much energy in your careers. And it's dutiful that you do that. But don't become so absorbed that you think that's it, that's all in all, and I'll, as they say these days, I'll take up spiritual life later. You're all not following that mistaken idea, but it may also be that, you know, I'll really become serious later. I had one man describe this to me. I'm convinced that when the time comes, I can detach myself from all of this, and with the same enthusiasm and focus that I am putting my mind into my money stuff now, I'll be able to Krishna stuff later. Same principle. It's just fixing the mind on this, and then later I'll fix the mind on that. I'm developing mental strength so that I'll be able to do the Krishna program later. But it doesn't work like that. The spiritual energy doesn't work just on willpower. Certainly there's some discipline of the mind, but that's necessary, but the mind that's addicted to material enjoyments of different kinds is not going to just idly say, okay, you gave me my time, now it's your time to go for spiritual life. It doesn't work that way. Addictions don't disappear just because you want them to. Therefore, at every stage of life, this purpose needs to be cultivated and carefully, very, very carefully understood, while dutifully taking care of preparing for your careers. The deeper mission of life, the real mission of life, needs to be understood and systematically pursued by the right process. He who strives by right means is guaranteed of success, Krishna indicates. And what is that right means? Very responsibly and according to codes of theistic conduct, take care of your duties nicely. Don't stray from virtue. And always think of Krishna. Cultivate. Perform your prescribed duties and always think of me, Krishna says to Arjuna. Perform your prescribed duty at each stage of life. Do it very conscientiously because it's for Krishna, and fix the mind on Krishna. Our most effective means for that is the holy name, or saying the same thing is really what we want is a taste for the holy name. Not just getting our rounds done, or developing a taste for the holy name and developing a taste for the message of the scripture. It gives us intelligence to direct our lives in such a way we'll reach our destination and not get sidetracked in the sideshow of sense gratifications that come along in the course of life. Okay, it's 8:30. I'm going to end. See if there's discussion. I asked the same question of the persons who are doing this work. The translator is Gopi Puranadana, and he's quite certain that as the Bhagavat and Mahabharata incidents are historical incidents, they're not a story. It's not a story to teach us lessons of life. The literal historical events, he's convinced that it's literally, we should take it as literal historical events, events that took place that are being described. When I discussed with Jayadwaita Swami, who is the editor, one of the editors for this publication, he said, you can take it either way. He explained that Gopi Pranadana is particularly strong in his convictions that it's literal historical events, literal factual events that are just being narrated. And one can take it the other way too. It doesn't detract from the message. Now, neither of those persons are Srila Prabhupada. They're both elevated Vaishnavas, so therefore I'm not giving you a definitive answer. But, you know, this one has this opinion and that one has another opinion. And I understand the message behind both. The message behind the first one is if you just take it as story, then it's very easy for the mind to go into, well, maybe something else is also a story. And the other, it allows for more maturity in the mind of the reader, that one can make a distinction. Bhagavatam narrations are literal narrations. And this one may or may not be, it's not so important. I mean, it's not critical. Whether it's a creative writing of Shukadev Goswami to express to the world, his audience is the world, what is the essence of the message of Srimad Bhagavatam? And if it's... Anyway, Gopi's very, very careful. I've known him for years and years and years, and he's really careful about being faithful to the parampara. So that's what his expression is. It's not just Sanatan Goswami isn't going to waste his time, because let's say Jiva Dharma is a deliberate fiction. It's retelling, in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's own words, it's a retelling of a message of the teachings of Lord Chaitanya in various forms in a contemporary style. So it's easy for the persons to read and become, you know, caught up in the storyline, at the same time giving essential teachings. So that's also a perfectly legitimate literary form. So then the consideration is, what is the qualification of the writer? Do they have the qualification? They have captured the essence of spiritual understanding, which now they can present in a very palatable form for their audience. And in Shukadeva, in Sanatana Goswami's case, the answer is resounding yes. He has that qualification. Therefore, Jayadvaita Swami's response is not so important. Because either way, they're both legitimate art forms. In the case of the writings of Rupa Goswami, where he's describing pastimes of Krishna that we don't find in Srimad Bhagavatam or even in other Puranic literatures, the answer to that is he's experiencing those pastimes. He's just narrating what he's experienced. By his transcendental meditation upon Krishna's pastimes, he's entered into Krishna's pastimes. And he's just describing the exchanges. That's another art form. I personally lean towards the side of it's actual historical events. It's actual events that took place and they're being narrated. It's actually an Akila, a supplement to Mahabharata, describing this just literally as it says, these events. In either case, in order to get to properly understand and to get the full spiritual benefit of Brihad Bhagavatamrita, one's mind has to be properly faithful and chaste. So I'm more familiar with that territory of accepting as literal. And also I trust Gopi Puranadana with his scholarship to give the real story and not just put a spin on it. Anything else? That question was asked. Right. Who? Someone asked that question? You asked the question? What was the qualification that Draupadi had that she didn't place any blame on her husband's for her, and Yudhisthira in particular, for her predicament? How can you gamble me away in it? What are you doing? Unquestioning. It's her high character. I mean, it's how she saw herself. She saw herself as literally the property of the Pandavas. Now, she certainly would have expected that they would take care of her perfectly. So she didn't doubt their exalted qualification to take care of her perfectly. She understood the situation, that due to the elevated nature of Yudhisthira, I mean, she said it. He was invited into a match of skill where it was very clear that he had no skill at all in dice. And Shakuni did. Not only that, Shakuni's a cheater. He's skilled and he's a cheater. But on the religious principle of not declining some competition, he accepted. So the virtue of my of Yudhisthira is unquestioned. Just like I was expressing this morning, grace, like the grace of Yudhisthira being able to handle hospitality, or Bhishma receiving the Pandavas properly, it's not something you can buy in the marketplace or put on and take off, like, you know, an ornament. It's in one's character or not. And this elevated nature of Kunti, say our women can follow in the footsteps or receive great inspiration from Draupadi, and men can receive great inspiration from Yudhisthira. But to be of that caliber, it's a quality that comes by Krishna's grace and lots of cultivation, because she had that quality. Her mind didn't go to that place, finding fault with her husband. Didn't go there. We didn't hear about
The disappearance of the Lord being discussed. The Lord appearance is what we discussed more in the last time. The disappearance of the Lord is not that much discussed.
Not much.
So, is there a reason why it's so?
Sure. You want to guess the reason why? Similar to why Vidura chose to not speak about what's going on in Dwarka. Same reason. It's not palatable. So Shukadev Goswami doesn't mention it much, and our acharyas in turn don't mention it much, although there is some mention. And the mention is primarily in the form of helping us to understand the Lord's doing, arranging for his disappearance pastime was to bewilder the atheists. But at the same time to satisfy the atheists. Satisfy the atheists, meaning to give them what they can hold on to, aha, Krishna had a material form. Yeah.
Some questions of the topic. In one of our discussions, one question was raised that how demigods were the beneficiaries of Raj spread in our society. One of the components of this attitude is it's for the benefit of someone else. And Raj perfectly knew. The beneficiary of his rendered prayer to God Narasimha Dev was demigods. How demigods were the beneficiary of God Maharaj's prayers?
It was primarily his father who was the beneficiary of his prayers. The demigods were already in a well-situated position. In the category of being unfortunate, the most unfortunate was his father. So his concern went to his father not because by skin disease consideration, but by misfortune consideration. So I don't know if what I'm saying to you is to go down the path of considering the prayers of Prahlad, how it was specifically to be of benefit, like conscious, deliberate, of benefit to the demigods. It seems more it's just the exhibition of Prahlad's pure devotion was the exhibition of Prahlad's benefit to the demigods. Just showing and being a pure devotee. Being fearless, being completely humble, being completely attached to Narada, showing that there's no interest other than the interests of pure devotion. That's instructive. He did so while honoring them. Actually, they're the ones qualified to speak, not me. But then he demonstrated that he was able to achieve what they were unable to achieve. Not due to his position of birth, disqualified by his position of birth, son of a demon. But exhibited because of his spiritual attainment. So his that's the answer I would give. One can serve or be consciously in the service or for the benefit of others without necessarily in a direct manner rolling out a red carpet and inviting them to move on to the red carpet. Some honorific exhibition. It may simply be the execution of pure devotional service. Anything else? Okay. Jindaprabhupada ki jaya.